Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 25th of June 2019. I'm your host, The Real Gerald Quinn, hosting here on my YouTube channel, Real Deal Podcast. Remember, this podcast will be up anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes after the conclusion of the podcast. We also will be up on Blog Talk Radio sometime this evening. I will have the episode available for Blog Talk Radio as we ready for what should be a just NBA landscape changing next couple of days as far as free agency goes. Of course, free agency begins July 1st, unofficially June 30th. And, you know, the rumors and innuendos and are absolutely flying. Couple of things that have come about that I found interesting. One, to no surprise, Dallas is going to offer Porzingis the max 5 years, 158. They want to do this because they risk if he goes out there next year, has a big time year, he will be unrestricted. And then that, of course, puts other teams in the mix. They want him to sign now. They want him to sign now and be locked up for the foreseeable future. And again, Porzingis is still a young guy. Porzingis is 22, 23 years old, so he's still a young guy. Risky, yes, but the potential of that duo, him and Luka Doncic, is something that you have to take the risk. It's worth the risk. I mean, Toronto... You know, I don't think Toronto signing Kawhi Leonard or trading for Kawhi Leonard was as big a risk as everybody wants to make it out to be. But, you know, scared money don't make money. So you got to take chances in the NBA. This is something that Dallas has the potential not only to have Porzingis and Doncic. They can also they're also going after possibly Kemba Walker or Al Horford. So if they can get. You have those two guys who can be potentially both all-stars who will be. Doncic is going to be a generational franchise player, and Porzingis, we know, has a chance to be a perennial all-star. Not superstar, but all-star. You get a third guy in there, whether it be Horford or even Kemba Walker, and then you're talking about being right in the middle of the mix in terms of the Western Conference. And right now, if you're in the Western Conference, you feel like if you are a playoff team in the Western Conference, that you have a legit chance to compete for an NBA championship or for it to go to to go to the finals. Like, you have to feel that way. That is how far Golden State was ahead of the rest of the league, and now the big bad wolf is out of the mix for at least a year, depending on what they do next offseason. Or how quickly Klay Thompson recovers. So you're, Portland, Denver. We saw what Utah did, getting Mike Conley, which is a very good move. You have a chance, which, leads me to say, from a Houston Rockets standpoint, I don't know what the hell Houston is thinking right now. I don't know what Houston's strategy or logic is in terms of what they're trying to do. Put all the nonsense aside with D'Antoni, Paul, and Harden. Put that aside. That's basic NBA drama, and we see that every in season, off season. I'm just talking about the fact that this idea that Jimmy Butler has now become the cavalry. Like, Jimmy Butler is going to be the missing link to putting Houston over the top and into the finals and win in terms of winning a championship. They want to make moves in terms of trading Capella for some pieces, shooting, rebounding, whatever, additional pieces to take the load off, somewhat off Harden and Chris Paul. So be it. I have no problem with that. But that team over the last 2 years has played a relatively healthy Golden State, as tough as anyone has played Golden State healthy in the Kevin Durant era by far. It's not even close. I mean, it's really not close. I mean, they've taken 5 games, from a healthy Golden State. Toronto did not beat a healthy Golden State. So, again, if Houston could just take a deep breath, calm down, they could be in the NBA Finals next year. It is like they, I mean, again, no one is going to run away with the Western Conference Finals or with the Western Conference next year. It's just not going to happen. I don't care if Kawhi does go to the Clippers. Again, Clippers will be amongst four, five, six teams that have a legit chance to get to the Western Conference Finals. Or maybe not five or six, you know, three or four, they have a chance to get to the Western Conference Finals or get to the NBA Finals, I should say. Denver, Portland, the Clippers, if they get Kawhi, Houston. So that's four right there. I don't think Oklahoma City is on that. It's kind of a notch below. I would even, Utah is not that far away from being in that mix. The Lakers, depending on what they do, that's five. I mean, they could be anywhere from five to 7 teams to have a chance to get to the NBA Finals coming out of the Western Conference. So, again, Houston, you know, but again, Houston is a prime example of a team that just cannot get out of its own way from a standpoint of, you know, the D'Antoni nonsense with, you know, this with the MVP, everybody knew that the Greek Freak was going to win the MVP. James Harden probably knew that the Greek Freak was going to win the MVP. Houston wants to send out, you know, this tweet, you know, basically giving Giannis a backhanded compliment about winning the MVP, but James Harden deserved it. So, again, which shows me where the franchise's head is at. And so that franchise will never be a championship. They will never win a championship because they just don't have the mentality. They don't, you know, the analytics, the, you want to say, to a lesser extent, the style of play. I think that's somewhat a little overblown, but they're a franchise that just cannot get out of its own way from a standpoint of just having a mentality to win a championship. They want to win, but they want to win on their own terms. And sometimes, you know, more times than not, it doesn't work that way in the NBA or any sport for that matter. You got to sacrifice some shit. You got to be willing to swallow your pride, change shit up. So, again, Western Conference is wide open in terms of what it could look like next year. As far as these major free agents goes, thinking about the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving kind of conundrum and where it could leave Brooklyn, the Knicks, Golden State to a lesser extent, because I think Golden State had made plans for Durant leaving. Maybe there was a hope and a prayer that he would resign based on the fact of this injury. But again, Durant will not be part of Golden State with Golden State once he returns from injury in 2021 season. I think Durant, you know, I don't buy the Durant to Brooklyn. I don't buy the Durant to Brooklyn from the standpoint of that. You know, all the reports, all the indications have said that he wants to be a New York Knick. We've been hearing this now, basically going on for the better part of the course of this season, and it's kind of similar to when people were talking about behind the scenes a year prior to LeBron leaving Cleveland and going to the Lakers. Like, in some ways you were saying to yourself, it might be too obvious, but when you go back and look at the tea leaves and look at articles and reports and what people behind the scenes or what people knew who were close to the station knew about the situation, that it basically almost was a done deal a year in advance that LeBron was going to be a Los Angeles Laker come 2018. And I think I kind of get that sense with Kevin Durant going to the Knicks. And I just don't see Kevin Durant as the best player going somewhere that he really doesn't want to be in terms of Brooklyn. Now, Kevin Durant does not want to go to Brooklyn. All indications that say Kyrie wants to go to Brooklyn, Durant wants to go to the New York Knicks, and the question would be, which one could possibly convince the other to play to go to their respective team, or to go to the team of the player of that player's preference. And I mean, I'm sorry, Kyrie, but I'm a Finals MVP. I'm arguably the best player in the world. I'm not coming to join if I'm Kevin Durant, I'm not coming to join Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. I will play with Kyrie Irving in with the Knicks. But if this thing is going to happen between Durant and Kyrie, if I'm Kevin Durant, it's going to be on my terms if I'm Kevin Durant. So I would be, this might be a little strong to say, but I would be borderline shocked if Kevin Durant was on the Brooklyn Nets. Now, for Kevin Durant, I like the roster. In terms of basketball situations, I think Brooklyn is a far superior basketball situation in terms of the culture and what they're building versus the Knicks and their history with that owner. To me, that's not even close. The flip side with Kyrie Irving, you would think that the allure of playing with Kevin Durant would be enough. But again, it sounds like Kyrie Irving is all in on Brooklyn. I think Kyrie Irving, I'm not so sure how badly Kyrie Irving wants to play Kevin Durant. I just think Kyrie Irving wants his own team and looks at the Boston situation as something that wasn't his fault, looks at the Boston situation as something that he, like a bad dream, and he could start fresh in Brooklyn, and that he could be the guy in Brooklyn. What do you do if you're the Nets? And again, the Nets, it's not like the Nets lack options here, because you have now Al Horford is in the mix. Chris Middleton. You still could re-sign D'Angelo Russell if you want to. But to me, if I'm Brooklyn, I'm not taking Kyrie Irving without Kevin Durant. There's no way in the world I'm taking Kyrie Irving without Kevin Durant. I don't want Kyrie Irving leading my franchise moving forward. And there are too many red flags with his injury history, with what transpired in Boston. Kyrie Irving basically sabotaged the franchise with the Boston Celtics. Almost single-handedly sabotaged the franchise. So I don't think, if I'm Brooklyn, they have too many other options. I mean, you could re-sign D'Angelo Russell and get Kevin Durant. Now, you want to say, well, would Kevin Durant want to play with D'Angelo Russell? Who knows? I can't answer that question. But I would, again, if you're Brooklyn, you pose that question to Kevin Durant. And if Kevin Durant says, hey, since this is somewhat out of his comfort zone in terms of he wanted to be a Knick, if Kevin Durant says, hey, bring Kyrie on, I'll sign right now, then you sign Kyrie. Is Kevin Durant, you know, question's been going around, is Kevin Durant worth the risk as far as signing somebody with who's going to miss the better part, if not probably all of next year? And I would lean towards yes from a standpoint of he's still not, still in his prime as far as age goes. He is not a guy who is dependent on athleticism. When you shoot the ball the way he can shoot the ball, your age is going, your game is going to age well in the NBA. Like, I feel like he could be, he'll always be 25 points that he can wake up, you know, roll out the bed and score 20 points. And he's developed enough of his other skill sets as far as playmaking, rebounding, the nuances of the game. He's developed, he's become, what happened in Golden State is he expanded, he became a more of a cerebral player versus his years in Oklahoma City. Like, I really think like his understanding of the game of the game went to a whole nother level playing with that culture, with, you know, in that system, with a Steph Curry, with a Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, guys who also were, you know, just highly intelligent basketball players and understand how to play basketball. So I think Durant, you know, if he's not, his days of being the best player or even a top three player, those days may be over, but I don't think the slippage is going to be as dramatic as some of the guys that we've seen with Achilles injuries in the past. And if you're the New Jersey Nets, and if you're the New Jersey Knicks, excuse me, if you're the Brooklyn Nets or the New York Knicks, then you know what? Based on your history of losing, you have no choice but to take a risk on that. You have no choice. Like, you've been losing, especially the Knicks. Brooklyn has, you know, maybe, Al Horford. Again, I wouldn't do it, but maybe you are content with going with Kyrie and Al Horford and, you know, keeping some of the role players and taking your chances in terms of dealing with the rest of the Eastern Conference. Again, you don't know how Toronto's going to look. You don't know what's going to transpire in Philadelphia. I mean, if they get those two guys, they could be right there with Milwaukee as a challenger to get to the finals. Possibly, if everything goes right. Again, I wouldn't touch Kyrie, but that, you know, that team, assuming that Kyrie could stay healthy, you know, you put Al Horford, Kyrie on a team, that team would be a viable, they'll be a tough out in the playoffs. But again, to me, if you're Brooklyn, Kyrie by himself would be an absolute no-go. Durant has to sign on the dotted line first before Kyrie comes there. It's really just that simple. Now, I think they're gonna panic and sign sign Irving. When you really want something badly. When you want something, you will create all kinds of reasons of why you should get it, despite all the red flags, despite all the cons about that come with it. You really want something that bad, you're gonna find you're gonna convince yourself like this is the right move, this is the player, you know, this is who we want. Part of that comes out of desperation, years of losing. You know, they may look at half glass empty. They may be looking at videotapes of clips, replays of Kyrie Irving hitting the game-winning shot against Stephen Curry in the 2016 NBA Finals. They might have that on repeat. So I think personally that they're going to panic, make the wrong move, and sign Kyrie Irving, even if Kevin Durant doesn't come there. Again, Kevin Durant putting it out there last week, or his people's putting it out there, that his decision will be independent of Kyrie Irving, just lets you know that you know, I don't think it's a slight towards Kyrie Irving, but it's kind of like I'm not following anybody. Like if I sign with this team and so and so can so happens to find sign it, then so be it. But I'm making this is you know this is my own decision from this. You know, that Kyrie Irving is not going to dictate when he had a free agent is not going to dictate my decision. That's what that told me. I didn't think that it was a knock towards a direct knock towards Kyrie Irving. Couple trades happened yesterday, and you might not think a lot about it. Just in you know, with the NBA awards, the draft, free agency, things of that nature. But it was very important. I thought extremely important in terms of what the future of the league can look like. The Atlanta Hawks picked up $49 million of salary through trades they made for Evan Turner, Solomon Hill, and Allen Crabbe. Why that is important? Because that salary cap space will be up, will be cleared after the 1920 NBA season, which will allow them to position themselves to go after a Greek Freak in 2021 and possibly even a Bradley Beal. The 2021 free agent class is a loaded class, but it will be an old and loaded class. So you'll have the LeBrons, the Chris Pauls, possibly the Blake Griffins of the world. Those guys are older, a lot of miles on them, but you're going to have two prime time, you're going to have two big time free agents again in terms of course, the prize, more than likely, not more than likely, but possibly. Bradley Beal will be a free agent. Even if he gets moved before then, and again, the Greek what transpires with Milwaukee to me, I feel like, you know, everybody's talking about Durant and Kyle Lowry, but I'm telling you right now, how Milwaukee shapes its team in these next in this offseason and moving forward as the season goes along is going really, you know, that could have a lasting imprint on what the NBA looks like for the next 4 or 5 years, because they have a decision to make in regards to, and getting back to Atlanta will have the cap space to sign both the Greek Freak and Bradley Beal if the Greek Freak is a free agent in 2021. Now, again, you can make a case that that is a big if because Giannis will be eligible to sign a 5-year record $248 million extension come 2020. He's beyond qualified as far as Supermax, All NBA, won MVP last night. So that, you know, all defensive. So he more than fulfills those criteria. So he has a chance to become the highest paid player in NBA history come 2021. Excuse me, come 2020. Now, you know, he speaks glowingly of Milwaukee. He is a guy who I don't think is somebody who, from the outside in, is looking to form a super team. He kind of marches to the beat of his own drum as far as how he trains. Kind of has an old school kind of mentality, how in terms of height. The type of competitor he is, worked out, of course, with Kobe Bryant and what have you. But if these last 2 to 3 to 4 years have taught us anything, even going back to 2010 with the decision, nothing in the NBA is impossible. Like anything's possible in the NBA. Nothing that happens in terms of player movement should ever surprise, should ever shock you. Nothing. Getting back to Milwaukee, they have a situation where Malcolm Brogdon is a restricted free agent. Someone's going to give Malcolm Brogdon the offer sheet of anywhere from $17 to $20 million a year. It's going to happen. Is a member. He's not just a point guard. He can also play some two with his size. He's 6'5", over, you know, 200 pounds or so. above average defensive player, was a 50, 40, 90 guy this year. Those, of course, don't fall off trees. He's young. He's only 26. And someone is going to sign him to an offer sheet of probably in upwards of $20 million. It's going to happen. You have Chris Middleton, already a free agent. Middleton's about 27, 6'8", two guard, who can, you know, put the ball on the floor. Underrated playmaker. Can score. And he's going to get you anywhere from 18 and 20. And plays a position that is very rare as far as quality players at the two guard. There are not that many top two guards in the league. He's a legit. How many two guards are better than Chris Middleton in the league right now? Thompson, Harden, Bradley Beal. Who else? You want to say Jimmy? I look at Jimmy Butler as a small forward, but he's listed as a small forward. But even I'll take a 27-year-old Chris Middleton over a 31-year-old Jimmy Butler, to be honest with you. So he's eligible for a 5-year. You can argue CJ McCollum as well. In that list, as far as top two guards, he can sign a 5-year, $190 million contract. Now, Milwaukee can sign both of them. I don't think they can sign all of them and Brooke Lopez. So if they sign both of them, they'll probably lose Brooke Lopez. Brooke Lopez is going to look to get, one last contract towards the latter part of his career. If you're Milwaukee and you commit to both of those guys, you better round out the rest of your roster, because this is a roster that you're gonna live or die with moving forward with the Greek Freak. And this is a roster that is gonna determine whether or not only do you compete for a championship, but whether or not he stays with your franchise. Now, I don't see a situation where they move him. Like, they'll let next year play out. They'll let next year play out. They'll try to win a championship, and they'll say this time next year, hey, Giannis, here's a check for 5 years, $248 million in essence. It's 5 years, $248 million. What are you going to do? And if he doesn't sign that check, it's not check, but if he doesn't sign, if he doesn't sign that contract, then at that point, then it's a wrap. Like, you get New Orleans on the phone, you get a number of, a couple other teams that have assets. And you do what you got to do. There's no way that I feel like if he turns down that contract, that they will re-sign him as an unrestricted free agent. Like, I don't see that happening. So at that point, now again, you can go into the 2021 season, see how your season goes. I'm assuming that I'm playing devil's advocate that they don't win a championship next year. It is very much possible that Milwaukee could win a championship next year. They'll be amongst the teams that will be in that, that six, 7 to 10 teams that could win a championship. Or that can get to the finals and possibly win a championship. Anyway, that number could vary depending on what moves I make, but they're going to be at least anywhere from, 7 to 8, 7 to 10, 5 to 8, 6 to 9, somewhere in that range of teams that can win a championship. Milwaukee is without question in that conversation, will be part of that conversation. Middleton can get better. Brogdon, all those young players can get better. If Giannis takes a leap that I think he can take, they absolutely could win a championship. But let's just say that they come up short again. And and he turns down the 5 years, $248 million. You can roll the dice. I don't think they would, because it would be terrible, it'd be terrible business, but you can either, you know, trade him in the offseason of 2020 or trade him in the All-Star break, you know, February 2021. I think one or two things probably will happen. Like, he will never reach total unrestricted free agency. Like, it's way too dicey if you're Milwaukee. If he turns down that max salary, if he turns down that super max salary in 2020, you're almost compelled to where you have to move him. Like, you have to. I mean, there'll be a couple, two or three teams that have an unlimited amount of assets. Beginning with the New Orleans Pelicans, right? With the Pelicans. So, you know, right now the clock is absolutely ticking on the Milwaukee Bucks. It really is. I would be surprised if they didn't sign both Milton and Brogdon. I think even if you go to luxury tax, you have to sign both of those guys. You can't. Both of those guys are, you know, I think Chris Milton, if you prioritize one over the other, you probably would prioritize, again, Middleton from a standpoint of harder to find a top five two guard than it is, say, a point guard who. Probably Malcolm Brogdon, you want to say top 10, you know, is Brogdon probably the top, in that 10 to 12, maybe 10 to 15 range as far as top point guards in the league. So they're more quality point guards in the league by far than there are two guards. So from that standpoint, you would prioritize Milton first. And Brogdon's restricted. But both those guys have to be signed in order for Milwaukee to compete, give themselves the best chance to win a championship in 2020. Like, both you have to have both those guys. You have to have both those guys under contract. Pushing gears a little bit, Lena Waithe came out this past couple of days, basically called out both Denzel Washington and Will Smith for not financially supporting independent films directed by black filmmakers, first time black filmmakers at that. And you know, when you call somebody out, and when you call two guys who are probably, you know, well, without question, the two top African-American actors over the last, or most important African-American actors over the last 25 to 30 years. Denzel, again, I think Denzel is in discussion as greatest actor of all time, in my opinion. Will Smith has been one of the most, one of the highest grossing actors in history. When you call those guys out, you can't sit up here and not do your homework if you're Lena Waithe. And clearly, she didn't do her homework on Denzel Washington and what Denzel Washington has done for not only black actors in terms of creating opportunities, but directors as well. I mean, great, you know, the movies like Fences, Great Debaters, those movies don't get made without Denzel Washington. Antoine Fisher as well. Those movies flat out don't get made without Denzel Washington. Some of the opportunities that actors like Russell Hornsby, who played his son in The Fences, you know, that guy has taken off somewhat after Fences. Maybe that doesn't happen if he doesn't get that role, but that movie's not made. The Hughes brothers directed The Book of Eli. Again, that movie does not get made if Denzel's not in it. And that's the unique thing about Denzel. Obviously, one of the great talents that we've ever seen. He is flat out box office. Anything Denzel touches is going to be automatic $100 million in the box office, even if the film is not that good. It's just that is the power of Denzel as far as where he's at right now in his career. But calling him out is just, I mean, again, it's just not accurate. If you lean away, again, I don't know what Will Smith has done for independent film in terms of financing independent films. I think we're also going on the lean away is going, we're going on the premise that we're assuming that we know exactly what Will Smith or Denzel Washington has done, have done without attention or seeking attention. Like there's, I mean, the possibility does exist that they could finance films without us knowing it. That possibility does exist. Unlikely, more unlikely because of who they are, but it's still a possibility. Now, again, I don't think Lena Waithe is way off in terms of this. Basically, her overall point was we, as African Americans, need to do a better job of supporting each other and building up something instead of going and, you know, our own, doing our own thing, to kind of paraphrase what she's saying, which I from that standpoint, I agree with that. We, that, you know, in all walks of life that we need to pull together instead of standing apart. But if you lean away and you feel this strongly about it, this passionately about it, and I, again, I don't think there's any hatred towards those two individuals, Denzel and Will Smith, how about, you know, reach out privately, reach out. I have no problem with someone getting criticized. I don't care how much I respect them. Again, I think Denzel, you know, Denzel's an icon. He's my favorite actor of all time, by far. But everybody can be susceptible to his criticism. I don't think anybody anybody can be criticized. But again, if you're leaning away, if you just got, you gotta do some homework on what you gotta know what you're talking about. Cause that's just not, in regards to Denzel Washington, it's not accurate at all. It's not true. It's just not. So, again, I kind of would like to hear what the responses from Denzel Washington, Will Smith. I feel like those guys are at their points in careers and places in their lives where, you know, Will Smith just turned 50, Denzel's over 60, where they just like, look, man, I'm gonna do my, we're good. We've contributed with, you know, not on some stick their nose up or look down on anybody. I don't think either one of them are that, have that type of personality, from at least from afar, or move that way. But I don't expect a response. To be honest, I don't expect a response. Those guys right now are, I mean, Denzel's still at the top of his game in terms of what he's doing. Will Smith is out here living his best life. It's like nothing's going to get in the way of Will Smith being happy. That's just the energy that I get from Will Smith, even from afar, just in terms of just how he presents himself, what he's doing with you know, with these different shows and productions and things of that nature. So, you know, again, Lena Waithe, I respect Lena Waithe. I respect what she's done, what she's meant to the industry, what she's trying to accomplish. And even what I do as far as a independent, creative content, content developer, you know, I want to pull more people who are like-minded and try to get things going and do be more collaboration. Anybody who's watched this podcast know how big I am on collaboration. I love it. I believe the more the merrier. I believe I want other people's opinions. And I just think that we all have special talents and different talents that we, you know, could be like the Avengers out here, to be honest with you. But doesn't go that way a lot of times. And as a creative have to have you're a creator for a reason, a creative for a reason. You gotta find other ways to move, maneuver. You gotta keep fighting. And I think Lena Waithe will. It's been a rough couple of months for Lena Waithe professionally, as far as dealing with this, you know, this Jason Mitchell situation with Jerrica, not Jerry, her, she plays Jerrica, Tiffany Boone. That got ugly, and that got ugly fast this year, and it kind of took the glow and took some shine off what I thought was a very good season of The Shy. I thought season 2 was better than season 1. And I was kind of so-so on whether or not I was going to watch the show I felt like a shaky season 1. Season 2 went, you know, I thought season 2 was borderline, I don't know, like I say great, but it was very good. And I'm definitely looking forward to season 3. Jason Mitchell is an ensemble part of the show. He's not James Gandolfini or Bryan Cranston. He's not on that level as far as the importance of the show. There is a ensemble cast, and you basically have had cast members even come out and say that without directly saying that. Like, Shy would be fine without Jason Mitchell. But, Lena Waithe just wants collaboration, and, she's passionate about what she does. I respect her passion. But you gotta have some facts behind statements. Statements without facts are just kind of like farts in the wind, as far as I'm concerned. Really, are they just they mean nothing to me. So we'll see how. Again, I want to see a response from Denzel. I'd be curious to see about how Denzel. How Denzel worked with Will Smith response to that. I want to talk a little bit about reparations, and there's been a lot of talk in regards to reparations over the past couple of weeks. They've had some hearings down in D.C. Had various news shows and different music shows where they were talking about reparations and kind of been the usual back and forth with it. I want to say, from a stand, I as African American believe that we as African Americans absolutely 1,000% deserve reparations, without question. It's not even a discussion from that standpoint. And I wouldn't even engage with I wouldn't even engage in an argument with somebody who was arguing against it. We just have nothing to. I don't even want to hear your point of view. Like we have nothing to talk about from that standpoint. We have to be just a different conversation, or we have to change subjects. With that being said, you will see Elvis before we get reparations as African Americans. It's not going to happen. I am one of the most positive, forward, progressive. The glass is full to me. Forget about half full. I'm a glass full person, not half full or three quarters. But I'm also a realist, and I also get a sense of the bigger picture. And to me, the win here is the conversation, and we as African Americans just educating the youth on what reparations are, why are we even having this discussion? That's the win for me. I don't expect reparations, even though I know we deserve it. But I just think that now that the conversation is back in the middle, I think that the conversation is a major topic again. Now we have to focus on, okay, we're not going to get reparations. Be real about that. How can we flip this into a positive moving forward? And again, to me, it will be educating the next generation, present and future generations, in terms of why are we even having this conversation? Because I don't even want to discuss the logistics of how reparations would look. Because it's not the idea of it happening is not even, it's not real to me. It really is not. It's not. It's like it'd be like a bad fantasy. Like a fantasy that just is not going to happen. So let's keep pushing the conversation. I'm not gonna sit up here on this podcast and say, hey, you know what? Just stop talking about it. I'm tired of hearing about it. No, I'm glad that people are talking about it. Even the debates and even some of the things like, you know, what Mitch McConnell says, fine. The bottom line is he's talking about it. So from that standpoint, I would have zero problems with the conversation. But it's not gonna happen. So dealing with the fact that it's not going to happen, what's the next move? What is the next move? This is the Real Deal Podcast. Again, 9:50 on a Tuesday night. It is starting to feel like summer. It's getting a little heated down here in the DMV. Again, this free agency is going to captivate the first part of the summer, without question. Once it dies down, then you get into a period of where, you know, it's basically time for vacation because, again, the sports landscape, I mean, you have the British Open coming up and golf in a few weeks. Yeah, you know, baseball, I don't really get into baseball hardcore like that until August, to be honest with you. One thing I want to say about baseball, and I'm glad I thought about this. So baseball is putting up these protective nets in certain stadiums, and we've seen a young kid, I think it was a 4-year-old that got hit with the Cub player, and I don't understand why it took anybody getting hit to jump on this. I really don't. I saw a poll a couple of days ago that said basically 78% of people thought that there should be a protective net all around the stadium or in the quote unquote hot spots. 22% didn't. I don't understand why that's not 100%. I mean, how many people have to get hit? Again, I don't understand how baseball wasn't on top of this years ago. Again, baseball is a sport that has 10 billion stats on a stat. They basically have a stat on everything. Stat cast, home, balls coming off the bat, home runs, just all kinds of stuff that you can't even keep up with every baseball stat. It's impossible. So to me, you have to have numbers on where the foul balls are going and the danger zones. There has to be a stats on this. So if this was long overdue, this is a case where when you're not proactive, people can get hurt. So baseball should have done this a while ago, and hopefully there won't be any semblance of a major injury. Major injuries moving forward, or injury, because one is too many for that matter. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Remember, this is the Real Deal Podcast, telling it like it is with no apologies. Thanks for listening.